Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today, we're going to be discussing the budget, and we have several announcements to make throughout the program, so make sure you stay tuned on this very fine day of Monday, January 13th, 2014. But first, let's get to the market report today with gold. And it kind of gives you, you know, a little bit of a shiver here in the east with gold $5.10 today at $1,254.70. Silver is up 26 cents today at $20.53. We had palladium up $6 today at $14.48. And palladium was down $3 at $744. The U.S. DX, the U.S. dollar, was trading lower against other currencies, the major currencies. You had the dollar down 0.11 at 80.52. Crude oil today was down also $1.13 at 91.59. It's interesting to see crude oil down again as everyone is talking about higher gasoline prices. So it kind of wonders, you know, you'd think they'd be able to do a little bit better of juggling their books. But let's get to the paper markets today. The paper markets today, down a couple hundred points almost. And of course, I believe this was, you know, a lag from Friday with the numbers that they came out on Friday. The Dow tumbled about 178 points today at 16,259. The NASDAQ was down 61 at 41.13, and the S&P was down 23 at 18.19. The U.S., the 10-year yield, 2.83%, down 0.03. So gold had a little bit of a good day today, gold and silver, so we'll have to see if it carries through in the month. A couple of things are happening this month, and of course the debt ceiling is coming along. Not a lot of mention of that, but I expect we'll be hearing something in the very near future. Good afternoon, Alfred.
Hi, Melody. It's hard to talk and run the computer with one hand. You don't have your headset, do you?
No, I don't. I'm a pro.
I understand. You get used to these headsets. You get used to them, and I don't know, it's hard. You kind of lose the ability to just talk on the phone, run the computer, pet the dog.
Well, that I don't have the opportunity to do when I'm working, but she gets plenty of pets afterwards, but she's becoming quite an office dog.
Well, can she take dictation or
we're working on
anything
it.
Like that?
We're working on it.
All right, good. What do we have today, Melody?
A lot of things are going on. We're going to be talking a little bit about China, the trading deficit, and who's ahead of who, and along those lines for today, a little bit about Obamacare. And there was an announcement, I believe Jack McLam has passed on.
Yep. We've got a brief letter from friends and family, Bob and Teresa Huebner, Jim and Jean Hissaw, and Carol Asher. They distributed the following. They said, "Dear friends of Jack McLam," now many of you may, I'm going to guess that most of the people in the audience recognize Jack McLam's name. He was one of the most decorated police officers in the United States, certainly for, I believe it was Phoenix, Arizona, probably back in the 1980s, would be my guess. I don't recall clearly. Jack has been a political activist. He's tried to expose a certain amount of government negligence, malfeasance, corruption, treason. Published his own newsletter for a period of time. I'm sure he hosted radio programs off and on over the years. And Jack, I knew Jack. We were acquaintances. He came to Dallas a couple of times and spoke at our meetings. I'd met him a couple of times. Always seemed to be good-natured. He had a problem with something made his hands shake back in the 1990s, and I don't know what the final cause of his demise was, but he did pass away in the last couple of days, I believe on the 11th. And in any case, the people again, Bob and Teresa Huebner, Jim and Jean Hissaw, and Carol Asher, they write, "It's with much deep sentiment that we write to advise that our much beloved friend and brother Jack McLam passed away on Saturday, late afternoon, Indiana time. Though he is missed far more than any words can say, all who loved him are grateful to know that Jack is at last freed from the physical disabilities that increasingly plagued him, especially these last few years. For the blessed relief that has come to him, we certainly have great reason to rejoice. We now join Jack's wife Angie and all his family in extending our deepest gratitude to each and all of you who, by means of your continuous outpouring and of love and prayer, provided such comfort and upliftment, particularly during this past very difficult week. And we can't help but feel somehow that all of our love and our blessing was received personally by Jack as well on the level of his inner spirit. Now that Officer Friendly is once again back to the greatest of form himself, be ready to receive the thanks and blessing he's likely to send you. A number of memorial services are being planned for Jack, the most immediate one taking place this coming week in southwest Indiana. Should anyone be close enough to that area and wish to attend, feel free to contact us by way of email, or by calling 208-935-7852 for further information. Concerning the other memorials to be held, we will advise you later on. Thank you again, and may God richly bless you all." Again, that's Bob and Teresa Huebner, Jim and Jean Hissaw, and Carol Asher. And I'll read that phone number one more time. If any of you are in southwestern Indiana and you'd like to attend Jack's funeral, memorial services, and so on, you can give them a call at 208-935-7852, and they'll give you further information, memorial, funeral, and so on.
I think that what I've heard most people talk when they mention Jack's name was he was such a nice man.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to imagine. You know, we weren't close friends, but we were aware of each other. We spoke once in a while. He was on my radio program. I think I was on his. I don't recall clearly. I know he came to Dallas to speak a few times, and I cannot imagine that man being mad.
Yeah.
Now, it may be that, you know, who knows, there's all kinds of people. I don't know what Jack's, you know, behind closed doors, I don't know what anyone's temperament is, but I could not imagine that man being angry at anyone. I suppose he probably was once in a while, but it was just, he had a really, really decent and pleasant nature. So.
Well, also, I believe, make sure folks keep his wife in their prayers, because I guess, I think it was her father that also had a major attack at the same time, you know, this week. So she's dealing with both the loss of her husband and medical problems with her father. So
well, that's a difficult situation.
Mm-hmm. So, all right.
What's next, Melody?
China surpasses U.S. as world's largest trading nation.
Okay, we can try that. This is, I think, the New York Times. I don't remember. I didn't write down the name of the newspaper, but when I look at it, I think this probably came from the Telegraph in England. China became the world's largest trading nation in 2013, overtaking the U.S. in what Beijing described as a landmark milestone for the country. And what they mean, they don't mean that China's gross domestic product is greater than ours, but they do mean that they sell more foreign goods. They export more goods than we do. All right? They are now the number one exporter in the world. China's annual trade in goods surpassed the $4 trillion mark for the first time last year, according to official data, after exports from the world's second largest economy rose to 7.9%. Rose 7.9% to $2.21 trillion, and imports rose 7.3% to $1.95 trillion. As a result, and interesting here, what's interesting, in the, at least in part here, is they exported $2.21 trillion and imported $1.95 trillion. Now, their deficit, their difference in trade is to the positive. They're exporting more than they're importing. We import more than we export. And in the long run, we can't continue to do that, but China can do well by exporting more than it imports. The story continues. It says, as a result, total trade rose 7.6% over the year to $4.16 trillion. The U.S. has yet to publish its 2013 trade figures, but with trade totaling $3.5 trillion in the first 11 months of the year, it's unlikely to beat China. The shift in the trading pecking order is reflected China's rising global dominance despite a slowdown in economic growth last year. So, China has rising global dominance, Melody. But we need not be concerned, because even if China, who cares if China sells more exports than we do? We're still the greatest country on earth because we've got Obamacare.
Woohoo!
Yeah, woohoo!
Woohoo!
I understand that. It's another one of the signs of the times. You sit back. How's this happened? How is it even possible without the complicity of our own government? Did China simply become on its own more efficient, more effective, more prosperous? Or has our government created disabilities for the American people that ultimately have hurt us? You know, China didn't just rise on its own. China has risen in large measure due to assistance that's been provided by our own government to China, if only by compromising our own ability to compete. Certainly we're talking about the shifting, moving industries, U.S. industries, and U.S. jobs to China. We didn't move them all. We didn't move most of them. We moved a lot of them, though. We moved a significant amount of industry, plants that manufacture things that we could have been selling to foreign countries. Just, no, let's make them in China. Let's let China make those things. Let the Chinese have the jobs. And you people out there in TV land, you can go get a job at McDonald's or maybe Target. You can be a clerk there. All right? Instead of being involved in industry, you can be a clerk. We're going to pay a price for it. and the price will continue to be paid until the American people wake up, tell government, get out of the New World Order, rebuild our tariff barriers, bring the industries and jobs back to this country. We'll make our own TVs, washing machines, computers. We'll make our own. And if we make them well enough, we can sell them to foreign countries too, and we will have increases in our exports. But as long as we're manufacturing in China, put our plants over there, guess what? We're in trouble. What do you think, Melody?
Do you really believe people of this country are willing to go back to work and do factory work?
Yep. I guarantee they're going to. They would if they had the opportunity. They'll take any job. What do you suppose factory work would pay in this country, or does pay? I guarantee it's not minimum wage. You make more money working in a factory than you will at McDonald's, and there are a lot of people that will be happy to take a job working in a factory in order to increase their income.
But I don't believe if industry came back that they will be paying the wages and the benefits that they once did.
Maybe not.
I'm not so sure that the wages and benefits wouldn't be that much more than minimum wage. I mean, they're certainly not going to be providing the retirement funds, well, or the Obamacare.
As was, but it's going to be better than it is. I'll give you that. And especially insofar as government continues to allow illegal aliens to flood into this country, they'll be happy to take jobs at McDonald's or an industry at minimum wage. And it'll put a downward pressure, but it's part of the problem we have with our own government. They've shipped some of the best jobs overseas. They've allowed illegal aliens to come in and depress wage prices for the rest of the people in this country. And that result is we are being impoverished. I was talking to a friend of mine. Hey, back in the 1960s, when he just got out of high school, he had a brand new Chevrolet. And he was really proud of it. And he's a grown man today. And he's got his own business, a little air conditioning repair business. He can't afford to buy a new car. This is a story that's not all that unusual or unique. We were almost fabulously wealthy in our own way back in the 1960s.
Yep.
And we have lost that to where we barely get by. And, you know, he's a competent guy. He's an intelligent, competent man. And yet, circumstances, he was living, he had enjoyed a higher standard of living back in the 1960s than he does today. And I don't believe for a minute that that's an unusual story. I can remember back in the 1960s, for myself, it was in many regards the same way. And how did this happen? Well, in the 1960s, we still had a currency that was backed by gold internationally and silver domestically. I'm going to trace it to those fundamental facts. We still had money that was worth something. I've talked about it before. I had a job. I was working for 85 cents an hour, my first job, back when I was about a freshman in high school. 85 cents an hour sounds like, how could anyone work for 85 cents an hour? That was 85% of a silver dollar. That's why you could work for it. It wasn't 85 cents the way we think about 85 cents today. It was 85% of a silver dollar. Today, at today's price, that would translate into, what, $16, $17 an hour in terms of silver.
Mm-hmm.
I had enough money. Before it was done, I had myself a nice little car. I could buy little transistor radios, one thing another. I wasn't rich by any stretch of the imagination, but I was doing fine. I could work a couple hours a night, and I had enough extra money to get by. and it goes back. It's not just a matter of economics in the normal sense where, well, we just have these problems. No, this has been caused. This isn't something that's inadvertent. The government has stood up and said, look, we're going to have a fiat currency in this country. It'll be great for central bankers. It'll be great for growing government bigger and bigger and putting more regulations on the people. It's not going to do the people any good. In fact, it's going to do them a great deal of harm. They will be robbed. They will be deprived. They will watch their standard of living fall. They'll watch the American dream disappear. Again, what is the American dream? It's the idea that each succeeding generation will live better and have a higher standard of living than the one before it.
And that dream was true for all of our history up until about 1970. And then in the 70s, after the currency became pure fiat, the American dream began to die. Who believes the next generation will live even as well as this one? Not many. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
And for their silver needs today, I got a great little package for $1,600, and that includes all your shipping costs. 40 1-ounce silver eagles. They will be dated 2014, and I do have a limited supply on those. 40 1-ounce silver eagles, 2014s, and we also have $40 face value of 90% silver, and that includes quarters and 50-cent pieces, so you could get a mixture of that. So a nice little package includes your shipping costs for $1,600, and if you would like to add a $5 Liberty gold piece, you could bump that up and make it an even $2,000. So it's a great little silver package, 41-ounce silver eagles, $40 face value, 90% silver for $1,600, includes all your shipping costs, comes out to almost 78 ounces of silver, and of course, if you want to add a $5 Liberty gold piece, you can bring it up to $2,000. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. 4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, DGS for discount gold, silver coins.com. And now I just want to add on to, we were talking about the trade deficit that China has surpassed the U.S. as the world's largest trading nation, I guess. Yep. I should say.
Yep.
Well, it's not going to get any better. You have Obama. He's traveling to Mexico February 19th to meet with the president of Mexico, of course, and Canada's president, their leader. I believe his name is Stephen Harper, the Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper. And so it is the North American Leaders Summit, and this will be the first meeting to include the new Mexican president, Nieto, I believe it is pronounced. So, and again, that is to work on
North
competitiveness,
American Union,
trade, investment, security.
Just to work on the North American Union
trade,
one way or
yep.
another, and to advance
yep.
the idea that Canada, the United States, and Mexico, and perhaps on through the Central America, should be combined into a single economic unit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and in doing so, of course, we will lose much of our national sovereignty. We will lose much of our national culture. We will find ourselves ensnared in a system of other governments and putting up with their rules and regulations in a way that will make things only worse for this country. There is no doubt in my mind. I mean, if anyone can look at this and say, look, the United States will be strengthened. The United States, and when I say United States, I mean the middle class of the United States. We're going to combine with Canada. We're going to combine with Mexico. That is our government's ultimate objective, or at least immediate objective. I won't even say ultimate. But we're going to combine with them, and somehow this is going to improve our standard of living. And the answer is it will not. It may be great for multinational corporations. It may be great for the top 2 or 3% in this country. But the vast majority of the American people will be further impoverished by their own government. They will suffer this betrayal because we tend to be apathetic and or ignorant, and we allow these things to happen. Somewhere along the line, we can hope that the day is coming when American people are going to realize what's being done to them by their own government and stand up and make it stop. And until that time, it's going to be a good idea to buy gold. As long as the people are dumb enough to put up with this crap, it does not bode well. It is a cause, a reason to protect yourself. And look at it. Look at the situation. And in my opinion, it's not cause for optimism.
I always question. I always wonder. I know why, but I always scratch my head. People don't buy gold and silver when they should. It's
mm-hmm.
low. Prices are low. They'll mm-hmm. wait for the situation like we had in 2008.
Yep.
They wait until the stock market drops to 6,000 and on the way down. Or they'll wait for a bank to close. Or they wait for this to happen instead of preparing now and mm-hmm. buying it because they know it's coming.
It
they
is
know
part
what's
of the,
around the corner.
Yeah, but it's part of the herd mentality that afflicts
yes,
most
is.
People.
Yes,
we
it is.
We are inclined to do what everyone else is doing. If everyone else has a hula hoop, I want a hula hoop.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone else is buying an Edsel, I want a car with a toilet seat on the front of the car. You know, it's fashion. You have women that are wearing spike heels or these. You know, I see these women wearing these idiotic shoes that have the platform in front of the spike heel. I mean, they are elevated. I have no idea how many women have fallen off of these stupid shoes. And yet, if everybody's doing it, everybody wants to do it. It is exactly the formula. If you're going to do what everyone else does, then you're going to get what everyone else gets. And I guarantee you what everyone is going to get will not be prosperity. It will not be significant wealth. If you're going to run with the herd, you're going to lose your assets.
That's what's going to happen. On the other hand, if you are a contrarian, and you have to be, a contrarian is someone who buys when everybody else is selling. He sells when everyone else is buying. When the herd all moves north, that's the time for you to go south. If the herd is swinging to the west, it's the time for you to go to the east. It's the way you make money. You buy low and you sell high. It is the fundamental principle, and it absolutely means if you're going to buy when the price is low, you are buying when the vast majority say this is stupid. And if you're going to sell, and if you do your research, sometimes the herd is correct. Some things are stupid. You can't say that the herd is always wrong, but when it comes to investment, they are primarily wrong. And you absolutely can't rely on them as an indicator of what's right and wrong. In fact, you can rely on them as a contrarian indicator. When everybody says, don't buy that, take a very close look and see if it's a product or an investment vehicle that actually has some significant value and is almost certain to be in demand in the near future. If it is, buy. Buy low, then wait. Bide your time. Wait for that investment to go up. And if your fundamentals are correct, if you've looked at it and you've said, this thing has to go up, price of this particular investment vehicle, it must go up. It might not go up tomorrow or next week or whatever, but a year from now, 2 years from now, it's going to be up. It's going to be way up. All right. That's what you're looking for. Something that is not high today, but will be high in the near future. That's what you buy. You buy low and you sell high. And that means you got to resist the herd impulse to do what everyone else is doing. Because if you're going to follow that herd, you're going to get nothing but watch your step. Watch where you step. If you're going to follow the herd, you're not going to get much but dust and cow pies. So what else do we have, Melody?
Well, Al, not too long ago, Target came out and announced, 70 to 100 million folks have had their identity breached.
Yep.
From their stores. And there's a big interview with Target's head people, and they're all concerned for their so-called guests. They don't call them customers, and they don't call them spenders and consumers. They call them guests of Target. Well, now we have the House passed Obamacare security notification to where they actually have to notify within 2 days if their personal data has been breached.
Now, that's really by Obamacare. If you sign up for Obamacare and somebody steals your personal data, they've passed a law that the government has to give you notification that your identity devices have been stolen from you. They've been discovered by someone else. And they have to give you that notice within 2 days.
Good luck.
Right? Yeah, great. Great. Good luck. What wonderful news. So if you sign up for Obamacare and someone steals your personal identification, like your name and the date of birth and your social security number and your phone number and your address, etc., the government must give you notice of the theft within 2 days. That means the crooks who stole your identity have just 2 days to rob you.
Well, actually,
without your knowing.
They even came out with Target said that these thieves were in there much sooner than when they released and found out. They were in there up to months.
Well, that's for Target, but we're talking about Obamacare. This new law applies to Obamacare, and I just want folks to say, yay! I feel more secure already. Hooray for Obamacare! Hooray for big government! Hooray for Big Brother! They're going to let me know if somebody steals my data. But then what? Huh? Okay, I get the notice from the government that my ID has been stolen. I cancel my credit cards, protect my bank account, tell Target and 20 other retailers not to let anyone buy any more stuff in my name, and I protect my digital assets in the bank from theft. But then what? Can I get new credit cards, new debit cards, new bank accounts? Probably. It'll take a week or three, but I can get them. But can I ever again use my new digital banking devices? Checks, credit cards, debit cards, bank accounts. Can I ever use them again with the same name, same address, same date of birth, same social security number, same phone number that I've used for much of my life? Can I use them again without being ripped off in the future? Once someone has stolen my identity, can I ever use that identity again? I mean, once the guy has my name, my age, my date of birth, my social security number, how is that enough for him to crack into the next credit card, the next debit card, the next checking account? Do I have to, once my identity has been stolen by identity theft, do I have to apply for a new identity in order to prevent being robbed? And the answer is not necessarily. I understand that it's not necessarily that way, but all of this, the problems they're having with identity theft, and Target's recent announcement that somebody stole about 70 million. First they announced 40 million, but then they said, oh no, wait, it's actually about 70 million Americans' identification information. You know what that means? That's over a quarter of the adults in this country shop at Target. All by itself, that's interesting information.
Actually, right? They said this morning 100 million clients. Maybe only 70 million were affected, but they actually had 100 million. That's a huge number considering the U.S. has 300 million people.
I know. And yep. A lot of them are kids, and a lot of them are unemployed, and they don't have any of that. You don't have any credit cards and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking half the adults in this country have had their identities stolen by means of Target. Now, how confident can you be about the security of your credit cards, your debit cards, your bank accounts, whatever, if they can steal the information on 70 million, 40 million, 70 million, 100 million at one shot? I mean, these events do not inspire much confidence when it comes to dealing with some of our digital banking devices. And they certainly don't inspire much confidence when it comes to signing up for Obamacare either. And you have to wonder, what are they going to do, Melody, in order to ensure that you and only you can use your credit cards, debit cards, digital banking services, and so on? I mean, it can be done. I'm sure they can do it with perhaps a retina scan, all right? Or a thumbprint, something, a biological marker where we can begin to use, the only one who can use a particular credit card is someone who has a particular retina.
How about a chip?
Chip, that's another one. Hey, what a great idea. We could put one in our hand or maybe in our forehead. What do you think, Melody?
You know what's so frightening about that are people, because of this problem, will openly, they'll be standing in line blocks down the street to have it done just to protect them from identity theft. And yet, we never hear exactly how many cards have been tapped into. We really don't know how much money was really taken. They really don't go into the details of how many people were affected. This many people could be affected, and supposedly their identity has been breached. But on the other hand, is this, again, just another way to get people herded together, to get on board, just another conditioning point towards the Obamacare? We won't allow anyone to get into your medical records, so, you know, we're going to...
I didn't say they wouldn't let anyone into them. They just said if they do get into them, we have to give you notice within 2 days. And that's 2 days after they figure it out for themselves.
I'm talking about future situations.
No.
About gathering your medical records and keeping them all together for whatever purposes might,
Mean some people not, what you're saying is you're raising the possibility that these thieves not only steal your social security number and your date of birth and your name and your address, you're wondering if they can also access your medical records.
Sure.
I don't know that they can. Right now, I don't know that they'd necessarily
probably not
want
now
it.
With Obamacare, but in the future, you betcha.
Well, I know there are no secrets. There are no secrets in the internet world. Anyone who thinks that you can operate in secrecy, it's a delusion, and it's probably not even advisable to try. I've seen this years ago. A man, he was an anesthesiologist. I knew the guy. I can't remember his name, but I knew him. And he was a good man. A doctor, anesthesiologist, and he had received his paychecks from the hospital, and they went into a trust, and over foreign trust that went into a second trust that went into a third trust, and in theory, he didn't have to pay income tax on it. Now, he was an intelligent guy. He wasn't a crook. He thought he was doing the right thing. I don't doubt he may have been doing the right thing, but nevertheless, he couldn't explain the secrecy to the jury. The jury didn't understand about his series of three foreign trusts. They didn't understand the law and whatever was involved in that. They didn't understand, and he was an intelligent, likable, and articulate man. And he had a couple of dozen people there. In any case, the secrecy is what did him in. It created an impression in the jurors' minds that he was up to something, and so they found him guilty, even though they didn't understand what was happening. Well, I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederson. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, Al, you know, I listen to the financial news programs in the morning just so I can, you know, see what the other side is saying, and they talk like Europe is getting better.
Yeah.
You know, they feel they have everything under control. You don't hear, you know, you don't read a lot. They don't talk much about it, except that things are getting better. Yet the Spanish unemployment is not doing so good.
No, it's terrible. They've got 40, according to a report from Ms. Shedlock, Spanish unemployment for Spaniards aged 18 to 24 is almost 50%. 50% of these young people, young adults, 18 to 24, Actually, 48.6% is what they measure. You can say 50% ballpark figure. They would take any job anywhere for low wages. IKEA Spain, they had 100,000 applicants for 400 jobs. And they go on and they say, in contrast to McDonald's workers in the U.S. demanding $15 an hour wages, almost half of young Spaniards would accept any job anywhere, despite low salary. 85% felt very or fairly likely to have to work on what is available. 62% considered it equally likely to have to go abroad. 80% said they needed to study more. Despite this, an overwhelming majority, 80%, are convinced that at least in the near future, they will be financially dependent on their family. All right? The kids can't even leave home. Young Spaniards recognize the benefits of the welfare state far more than their parents, except as regards stability and security. They're also convinced that their children will live much worse than they do. So, insofar as Spain had ever had a Spanish dream, and they dreamed that the next generation would live better than the previous generation, that dream's gone. They don't have it. We don't have it here in this country. They don't have it in Spain. And it's interesting that the young Spaniards recognize the benefits of the welfare state. Yeah, they like that just fine. Hooray. Free money. Sounded good, didn't it? Well, where are you now? You are unemployed and having to live in their folks' basement in large measure because you have been dumb enough to accept this idea of welfare as being a wonderful thing. Kids accept it in Spain, they're going to pay a price for it. Kids accept it here in the United States, they're going to pay a price for it. It's not going to be there. We can't keep carrying all the people on welfare. And when I say welfare, I'm not just talking about poor people. I'm talking about rich people that are getting fat subsidies out of the government. One way or another, we are going to go broke. Sooner or later, the government will not be able to provide all of that welfare and all of those subsidies. And when we hit those, when we hit that moment, those of you who are dependent, both the poor who are dependent on welfare and the rich who are dependent on subsidies, are going to find yourself in a lot of problems. It'll go harder on the poor than it'll go on the rich, but even the rich, they're going to have problems. And this is a little bit consistent. What we see in Spain, okay, we can see this implies that Spain's in trouble. They have an economic trouble. What does it imply for Europe and the European Union? Spain's not an isolated case. We have problems in Greece and Italy and France. The European Union is threatened by this information, by this phenomena. 80% of the kids are... Half the kids from 18 to 24 don't have jobs. All right? It's not good for Spain. It's not good for Europe. What about the United States? Are we immune from this? And the answer is no, we're not. In our increasingly complex global economy, what happens in Europe can have an adverse, ultimately an adverse effect on the United States, on China, on Mexico, on nations that I can't list. Why? Because as people have less money in Europe to spend, they're not going to buy much. They're not going to import much. That means the economy is going to shrink. Not just for Spain, not just for Europe, but for the globe. And implicitly for the United States. How much further can our exports be diminished, Melody, before we have some sort of a problem in this country? We can't sell enough goods to Europe anymore. How does that affect American manufacturing, what remains of it? How does it affect American employment and standard of living and so on? None of this bodes well. It's just another one of these leaves in the breeze that says we got trouble headed our way. People that are sensible will prepare to deal with that trouble. What do you think?
Well, there's been a lot of chatter about the reset of currencies happening in this first quarter. And I think what we're going to experience is the resetting of economies and living standards. And, of course, they are all interlinked together, of course. Yeah. But what we're experiencing it now. When people talk about the devaluation of the dollar, it's like, hello, we've already lost 95% of the value on the dollar. So, I mean, we don't have that much more to go. And it has taken how long to do this? So timing, to me, is not so much important as acknowledging and understanding and doing something about it. We saw France. I mean, we saw them strike up relationships with China. They know where to go where the money's at, and that's what these other countries are doing. They're going to where the money's at. You know, when we became the reserve currency, guess who had the money? We did.
Yep.
Now we have the debt.
Yeah.
Who wants to do business with somebody that's, you know, just waiting to go bankrupt? You don't want to put your money in the bank. If you knew a bank had a C or a D rating, would you want to put your savings in there? Of course not. So the countries are the same. And this is certainly unfolding. And
you know, when
I read
we talk
articles
about the dollar,
recently. Pardon?
When we talk about the dollar having lost 95% of its value, we can say it's lost a certain percentage since 1914. We can say a certain percentage mm-hmm. since 1933. We can say a certain percentage since 1971. The question is not how much it's lost precisely. The question is how fast did it lose it? And so far as they've lost 95% of the value since 1971, mm-hmm. right, in terms of gold and silver, used to be able to buy 25 bucks or what was it, $1 for an ounce of silver and $35 for an ounce of gold. Those days are gone. The fact that you're paying $12.50 for gold and $22 or thereabouts to buy silver, it indicates we've lost, just since 1971, we've lost 95%. But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that we can't lose 95% of the remaining nickel. Right now, we're walking around with dollars that not so long ago, today they're worth a nickel compared to what they were 40 years ago. But there's nothing to say that the dollar you have in your pocket right now that's worth a nickel as compared to 40 years ago. It could be worth nothing but a penny. It could lose another 95% of what the remaining 5 cents. We can knock off 95% of the remaining 5 cents. And you people are adjusted to it. You say, oh, I got these paper dollars that are actually no good, no better than nickels. All right, I got a roll of nickels in my pocket. And you're going to find out, nope, got a roll of pennies. Ha ha, guess what? You're going to have a roll of pennies before this is all over instead of a stack of nickels. And they can take on a percentage basis, and when we get down to where we have dollars that are worth only a penny or less, they can still take another 95%. The question is, how fast do you take a 95% reduction in whatever the value of your currency is today? And if they have that 95% reduction over spread out over a course of another 40 years, not too bad. We can deal with it. We can adjust. If they get that 95% loss in value, if it happens in 12 months, it will be devastating. There'll be no ability to adjust, and there will be an economic collapse. And it may be that the explanation I've just tried to provide is a little complex and confusing for some people, but it's still roughly correct. How fast is the value, the remaining value of your currency, going to disappear due to inflation, hyperinflation, whatever? Reset. You know, if they get together and the countries of the world say, okay, we're going to reset all of our currencies, I guarantee you one of the currencies that is going to be badly devalued will be the U.S. dollar. I can't imagine that there will be many currencies that will be more devalued than the U.S. dollar. What other currencies are in more trouble than ours, Melody?
Well, they're all fiat.
Well, I know they're all fiat, but how many of them are as deep in debt as we are?
Well, there's quite a few, but
not as deep
not,
as
they're not the size of the U.S.
Not to the dimension.
You know, in proportion, percentage-wise, there's some countries that might be as high, but they don't have as much.
Well, you know, it's impossible to predict, but it shouldn't be a surprise if they have a currency reset. And the value of the dollar, as measured by other foreign currencies, in relation to other foreign currencies, it shouldn't be a surprise if the value of the dollar is diminished, who knows, maybe as much as 30%, I don't know. Now, there are people who would argue more of a greater devaluation, some people would argue a lesser devaluation. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's 30% isn't unreasonable, possible. Then what? What will that do to this country? It won't be catastrophic. It won't be a catastrophic because it means that we won't be able to buy as many imports. That'll be the principal business. It means we won't be able to buy as many imports as we have in the past. It might even be a good thing because if I can't buy imported cheese, maybe it's time for me to open a little business where we make cheese. If I can't buy imported automobiles, maybe it's time to start rebuilding the American automobile industry. We will have to, perhaps a devaluation would be a good thing. But it'll depend on how much, how fast, and at least initially it won't be fun. It may be necessary and it may even be a good thing over time. But initially, it's going to be a problem. What else, Melody?
Well, it looks like we're just about out of time, I believe.
I know, but we've got how much? 2 minutes left?
Well, do we have enough? I wanted to talk about German gold today.
Okay.
And, of course, we all...
Long story. Long story. Well, we might save that for tomorrow.
How about the Millionaires Club?
All right, that's a good one. More than half of Congress now have the big boxes from the New York Times. Who dares to sling the label Do Nothing Congress? More than half the current members of Congress are now millionaires, a historical first. And this is from the Center for Responsive Politics, a report by the Center for Responsive Politics. Half the people in Congress are now worth $1 million or more. And I'll bet they weren't worth $1 million or more when they got to Congress. How are your congressmen becoming so extraordinarily successful? How is it that they have become millionaires? And they're going to say, well, you know, we just brown bag it. We don't ever buy our lunch, and we carpool, or we take public transportation to get to Congress. Maybe that's how they cut their costs, and maybe that's how they've become millionaires. But I'm willing to bet that more than a few of them are millionaires because they are taking bribes. And being in Congress has been an extraordinarily lucrative situation for them. Now, some people say, well, that's a cynical attitude. Our congressmen are honorable and ethical and so on, and they're not taking bribes. They're just smart. Well, maybe so. But tell me this. How many of you people in the audience are millionaires? How many people in the middle class of this country are millionaires? And the answer is not many. Huh? What do you think a congressman who's worth $1 million, what do you think his values are in relationship to the middle class? Do you think he's going to stand up and do what's right for the middle class when he's a millionaire, or is he going to do what's right for millionaires? It's not going to be surprising if we have a Congress that's primarily composed of millionaires, we should expect to see an increasing debt or income distribution gap in this country. We're out of time, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom. I want to thank all of you for listening. We will be back mañana. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.